Major headache, man.
Johnny, are you there?
Whoa, what did you put in my melon, man?
Johnny, you have to be quick. Hurry up, we gotta get the goods.
No, man, everyone in the kitchen sink is after me, man.
It's okay, Johnny, it's just a quick courier job. You know, the usual business.
Oh, Ralphie, this is it, man. Last job I'm ever gonna do for you, man.
Well, Johnny, look out, they're coming.
Lethal Mullet. G'day, mate. How you going? This is, of course, the Lethal Mullet. You're listening to it on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or your podcatcher of choice. Coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia for episode number 100. Yeah, that's it, folks. We've hit the 100, a century of podcasts here on the network. So big thanks to going out to, of course, FPN for letting us start this little adventure and really enjoying celebrating action films and having fun with like-minded folks and stuff like that too. And we're going to have a bit more of a celebration of these 100 episodes in a couple episodes' time. We were trying to get together one in time for this one, but unfortunately haven't been able to get all the schedules to line up. We're going to be doing one with Lee, Kyle and Kevin, of course, of FPN. Of course, you know, Kevin and Kyle is the founders of the network and, of course, the co-hosts of many of the shows. And, of course, Lee, our dear friend from over here as well on the, the Mando Mullet podcast for Star Wars and also many of the Lethal episodes we've had, particularly when we're chatting martial arts, folks, because he's a fellow martial artist. He's also the co-host of the Bloody Kings podcast, also there on FPN. And we decided as a team what would be the most fun, I think, the chat when it came to action movies, particularly of the 80s, because, I mean, let's face it, majority of what we've chatted to guests about on this show in particular is the old days of the Schwarzenegger movies, Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme, all that sort of period of the one-man army films. And so we're going to be looking at Conan the Barbarian, which is still to this day one of those great ones, which I've got to say, for me, it is one that I've probably not given it enough credit for being such a rich fantasy mythology. It's a dark fantasy. It's obviously barbarian fantasy. But when you look at just how clever Robert E. Howard was when he created not only the character, the world, but the history involved in it too. And obviously that encompasses Khal the Conqueror and many other characters like that too. And as I've mentioned here on the podcast before, I rewatched it not too long ago and I was just enamored with just how clever Milius was when he made that film. He's given it, you know, an immediacy in the world that he created in the fact that it's a lived-in world like Star Wars. Or another example would probably closer to the heart would be something like Fellowship of the Rings, where you're given this world that's old. It's a very old world, but it's also a very modern world as well. It's gritty, it's grounded, and there's ancient gods even then as well, and an older people, an amazing cast, and it's an interesting one to look at, folks, so we'll look at that too. But that'll be in a couple episodes' time when we get everyone together and enjoy one of the better action films, and definitely an interesting one for Schwarzenegger because he's got the hell of a cast around him. You know, he's got Mako. You've also got James L. Jones in there as well. A lot of great character actors in it as well. Plus just some really, really great action scenes, particularly between himself and his dear pal, Sven-Olof Thorsen, of course, star of Abraxas. One of the most misunderstood classics. Well, no about classics, but it's entertaining to watch if you can get through it. But he's an amazing actor. And, of course, one of the many gladiators that Russell Crowe faced in Gladiator, folks. That's right, Russell Crowe. tonight we're going to be looking at the 1995 film Johnny Mnemonic. Now, this is one I was really enamored with, particularly reading the work of Impact Action Magazine from the UK. Now, get a bit of a salute to our dear pal of the show and, of course, of particularly Highlander fandom as well, because he's a huge fan of Highlander. That is, of course, John Mosby, who obviously did a lot of work on Impact back in the day. And we used to read it as kids. So it would have been in year 11 or 12 at the time. And we were hearing about these movies on the way. And, you know, we're big fans of Dolph Lundgren. So for us, it was less a Keanu Reeves movie and more about Dolph Lundgren, because he'd just done Sergeant Andrew Scott of the U.S. Army. And, of course, Universal Soldier. Given us the Joshua Tree, as we call it out here, or I think it's called One Man Army overseas. And, you know, just continue to knock out great stuff like Showdown in Little Tokyo. So we were really ready for the Punisher himself to do another role. In this one, he plays the street preacher. So we'll get into that very soon. But it's a lot of fun, folks. It really is. And I'm sure, you know, anyone that's checked it out before, it's kind of seeing that this is kind of an inkling of the kind of sci-fi that we would kind of see.
What the Matrix is.
No, man, I have no idea. But, you know, I'll go for free pizza. No anchovies, though, man.
Obviously, it would lead to the Matrix being part, obviously, of his science fiction catalogue that he'd done. Keanu Reeves, you know, such a versatile actor when it comes to the different projects he'd done. And particularly, at that time, we'd been seeing him in projects like Point Break, and obviously Chain Reaction and some other really, really fun stuff. Obviously, Bill and Ted's. So, yeah, this was something a little bit different, action film, but also a little bit of sci-fi. And it had that internet craze about it too, which we'll get into very, very soon. But before we do that, this is how you can catch this show and many others like it. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. And now, it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, on tonight's news, just very quick one. We're going to go through the upcoming list of films we're going to be chatting about here on the channel in the coming weeks. Obviously, Conan the Barbarian is one we're going to be doing as a group effort with the FPN. But along with that, we'll be doing also Cyborg and Cyborg 2. Gore Vidal's Billy the Kid, Double Dragon, Rambo Last Blood, Robot Jocks. Yes, folks, we've finally seen Robot Jocks, and it is glorious. It's amazing. Obviously, Blood Fight's already out there, folks. We've got Kickboxer on the way as well, which is going to be a nice flashback. Part of some of the Van Dams we're going to be looking at, Wrong Bet, Double Impact, Death Warrant, Time Cop as well. Pray for Death, Nine Deaths of the Ninja, and Rage of Honor. In some of the many Shokasugi films we're going to be looking at. We're also going to be looking at the amazing Billy Zane the Phantom and chat about some of the Australian locations, folks, because it was shot here as well as some other locations around the world. And a golden old classic, Roadhouse. Yes, Roadhouse, folks. That is an amazing flick and just one of those ones that's on late night movies or late night cable channel. Always got to put it on and enjoy, you know, the amazing Patrick Swayze actioner. Although I think Next of Kin's probably a better film. A lot tougher. And we'll look at those very, very soon here on the network.
Oi, how's your man? Welcome to the dojo. Leave your shoes outside the door.
All right, welcome to the dojo, folks. Little quick dojo chat before we get into this sci-fi 1995 classic. So currently I am studying Shotokan and Goju-Ryu mixed karate. It's a great style, and it's really good for somebody like me who's in his 40s and obviously need to keep the bones strong, the muscles supple and strong. And I'm finding that a lot of the styles that I studied in my 20s and 30s, although they did do a lot of strengthening exercises, they never have the kind of impact that karate in particular has when it comes to conditioning. Although you do condition in some of those other arts that I've done, a lot of it's more towards the conditioning of throws, flips, and stuff like that you need to do when it comes to things like the judo forms, or in this forms of Aikido, where we're learning breakfalls, rolls, all that sort of stuff. More emphasis is on that, and obviously making your body supple enough and flexible enough to do that. Although that's part of karate, when I'm really finding it's not as easy as you get older to obviously keep that flexibility, but also maintain the strength that you need to be able to do that too. So although I'm far from what I would consider even close to fitness, it's an interesting journey to sort of, I suppose, get back to where I was at my peak fitness. So looking everything from the food angle to all the way down to obviously how much cardio and how much strength training I do, along with the conditioning that we get in karate. So it's very important that although I might do 30 to 40 minutes a day of cardio, that you also focus another half hour each day on actually conditioning. And that means obviously where you are blocking and where you are hitting, that you are using the muscles around those, and obviously conditioning the points of impact, all that sort of stuff too. So I've coordinated my little sparring space, or even just the little space in my own little home gym, to cater towards that too. And if one thing is that karate is very good for that, particularly Shotokan. It really has that strength base in it to really keep your shoulders, your arms, your upper body, particularly your midsection, your core, at the best it possibly can at that time. So, and of course, with that too, a lot of the weapons training, the kobudo, you know, kobudo is obviously a big part of, on side of karate. It's part of the Okinawan tradition, obviously going back to being an extension of your body. So part of that too, I'm sort of bringing in with workouts with, where it be the nunchaku, sai, the jo, the hanbo. Particularly, I think bringing back to the stick work too is a great workout, and particularly really loosens up the muscles. And a lot of the great long katas, the bo, but I think particularly the jo is a real workout, because you're using the full length of the shaft. And it definitely spins you around. Always moving on to other stuff as well with those too, the tonfa and much more. But what I love about it too is that you're starting to see, particularly now, having gone back to karate after almost 20 years away from it, how it really is goes hand in hand with the weapon style of kabuto. And I'm very interested to see where this takes me as I go through. I'm definitely about halfway through. The Q, gradings up until, of course, Shodan and stuff like that too. So it's an interesting journey. I always enjoy the journey depending on the style that I'm doing, and always learning every day. If you're not learning something, it's pretty boring, isn't it? Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah, man, it's been a real busy day, oh, wow.
Right on,
yeah.
Mate.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like I was telling my mate the other day, have a nice cold beverage and enjoy chatting about films and all that sort of stuff.
Well, here you go, mate. All right, folks, let's chat about it. 1995 saw the introduction of a film called Johnny Mnemonic, with the tagline on the poster of "He's the future's most wanted fugitive." This is Johnny Mnemonic, a film which we were waiting for, I think, for about a year or so. I do believe, even in the magazines at the time, it was kind of going through different development challenges at the time. And obviously there was a big draw with Keanu Reeves, because we were hugely anticipating some great stuff from him, obviously, after great hits like Point Break and obviously Bill and Ted's, all that sort of stuff. You know, he was becoming a bit of an action star at the time and doing a lot of leads and different stuff. And 1995, he was the hot actor at the time that was out there doing these great flicks. He plays Johnny Mnemonic in this, and he's a guy that basically stores memory of different things in his mind, in his cybernetic implants. This is a time where it's kind of a cross between Blade Runner and, if anything, looks like the Running Man universe sort of thing, set in the States. And he's a courier, so he takes his information from one place to another, gets a download, and gets paid. So he's kind of a mercenary sort of like character. And obviously he has a colourful amount of different people that are involved in trying to extract the information from him too. Now, what's interesting is this is the year, set in the year 2021. So there you go. So one of the big things about it, because it's such a rundown future, everything's transmitted not through, obviously, phones, computers and satellites, because that information is completely tapped into by competing different corporations and different criminal organizations, so nothing's safe. So the only way to do it is in, of course, the mind of a human and special couriers like Johnny Mnemonic. So this is an interesting one. It's kind of tapping into that whole cyberpunk universe. It's also based on a short story by William Gibson. And, you know, it's actually quite a fun little film for what it is, directed by Robert Longo. And it kind of feels like one of those, you know, sci-fi, particularly back then in the 90s, didn't have the massive budgets that we have now for these huge Marvel films and Star Wars films. Oh, well, George had his money for Star Wars films, I should say. But it was different for, obviously, you know, that period where, you know, a lot of these films, they couldn't do a lot of the CGI because it was still in its infancy. You know, we're still learning about all these different things. And I think one of the key things here is, you know, it was about the imaginative storytelling that they were trying at the time in the 90s. You know, we've got titles like Mortal Kombat were coming out, you know, obviously games adaptations and stuff like that. You know, it was hot on the heels of films like Street Fighter, for example, which were adaptations at the time as well. But what's interesting about these ones that were coming out, they're, you know, using as much live action effects footage as they could, as well as adding, you know, some of this new footage that was kind of, I think, also on the heels of films like The Lawnmower Man, which is that sort of virtual reality sort of thing that was coming in at the time. Very, very exciting, I think, in the 90s. You know, it was such a new thing. And VR still is, to some degree, you know, an amazing thing that people still, you know, whether it's gaming or vice versa, everyone's still getting a kick out of. All right, folks, let's look at the cast here. We've got Keanu Reeves, obviously. Enough said about this amazing actor. Even to this day, still smashing out some great ones. Dina Meyer, she plays Jane in this, and Dina's really good. Obviously, this is around about the same time that Starship Troopers had come out, so she was pretty big from that, and obviously, you know, had also been in, I'm just trying to think what else would have come out around about the same time, Dragonheart, I believe, the Sean Connery film. That came out about the same time. So, you know, she's always been fantastic. And in this one, very exciting to watch. She's does some great action in this as well, as she's, you know, one of the many bounty hunters, or, you know, in this case, guide to Keanu's character to make sure he's safe. Dolph Lundgren, in his most eccentric role to date as the street preacher. This is, you know, all the great lines like, "Hold sinners," all that sort of stuff. You know, he has some great lines in this one. And he's basically a souped-up cyborg junkie. He's key to getting all that sort of stuff built into him, and he's just great in the role. It's him doing what he does best, which is play very bold, theatrical villains. We also have, as a medic in this, Henry Rollins playing Spider. Now, anyone that follows my my social media at The Lethal Mullet will find that you're going to see, particularly with Spider, one of my favourite musicians. This is a gentleman who's also not only a musician, but a music producer. He's done some amazing work, even out here in Australia, with some great bands like The Mark of Cain. He's got a big presence out here in Australia. We love him. But obviously, the Rollins Band, the album Wait is just one of the great rock and roll albums of all time. And, you know, and he's not, you know, the big singer that other singers are and stuff like that, but there's a truth and honesty and purity to everything that he puts out in music. It's from the heart, and the actual music itself's a lot of fun. It's great. It's a bit of bluesy, a bit jazzy, a bit rock, a bit of punk in there. Obviously, he's got a bit of a punk background too, so he's really good. Speaking of music, we've got as J-Bone in this, Ice-T. So, obviously, Ice-T, big fan of his. It's huge. Really, really good in this one. In particular, Ice-T is great because it comes from one of my favorite bands. And, of course, that's Body Count. And Body Count did the soundtrack, or did a song on the soundtrack of Universal Soldier. That's where I first got to know the band. And just fantastic. Old school 70s, you know, palm muted riffing and stuff like that in the great guitar work on those albums. They're a lot of fun. Now, from Japan, we have Takeshi Kitano, or otherwise known as Beat Takeshi. One of the great, not only actors, but filmmakers from Japan. And he's just fantastic. Always in a lot of these roles. You know, he's a character actor, I think, at heart, from what we've seen of his work over the last few years. But I think the great one for me is, of course, going back to when he played the amazing Zatoichi. And that's a hell of a film. Obviously, it's one that he put together, and you get a great cast in that one, and some great music too. And has one of the greatest finales to a period piece, where you get an epic dance-off. It's just amazing. Also, we have Udo Kier. You might know him from Blade and many other films. Amazing actor. He plays Ralphie in this. Then we have a heap of other actors that you probably know from not only action work, but all over the place. Dennis Akiyama plays Shinji. Barbara Sokoa plays Anna Kalman. Tracy Tweed plays Pretty. Don Franks plays Hookie. And it just keeps going. There's a great cast in this one. And that's what's really good about this is that, you know, it is not only is it a film with the actors that we know, there's some great character actors in this as well. And it makes for an amazing viewing.
Johnny, are you there? Just Johnny, right? Just Johnny.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Obviously, this film is one that is definitely got William Gibson's world and feel all over it, particularly when it comes to cyberpunk action and cyberpunk thrillers and cyberpunk universes. William Gibson is not only obviously the writer and obviously the real thought behind this entire plot and story, but what is interesting is that this is without a doubt the kind of film and the kind of inkling that gave us kind of an influence for what would come later. And of course, one of the big ones being, of course, the one and only Matrix trilogy.
Whoa, Ralphie! That sounds like a good idea for a party, man. Or should I say, a trilogy of movies down in Sydney, man. I can work up my jiu-jitsu.
Now, an interesting note is some of the music was done by Brad Fiedel. Of course, he's the composer that worked on, of course, Terminator and Terminator 2. The classic sounds of da-dun-dun-da-dum, da-dun-dun-da-dum, ba-da-da. Well, I won't continue that. But you know the score. It's a very famous score. The production company for this one was Alliance Communications, distributed by TriStar Pictures in the US and MDP Worldwide, so that would have been for Australia as well. Obviously, it came out in 1995, mid-year, May 26, and the box office is quite high for this one, for what it was. It was a budget of about $26 million, and the box office worldwide was $52.4 million. So for a movie that I'm pretty sure only saw a limited theatrical release here in Australia, is more a VHS, if I remember, more than anything. It's an interesting one when it comes to that too.
Johnny, would you like to know the plot of the movie? Johnny.
Whoa, Ralphie, that'd be great, man.
The year is 2021, and the entire society is now driven by a virtual internet, where has been an effect, NAS, nerve attenuation syndrome, hitting all over the world. All corporations, mega corporations, try to take full control of the world, as they know they can control it through NAS. In this film, Keanu Reeves stars as Johnny, a courier, a mnemonic courier, who transports all forms of digital communication, and communications from corporations through an implant in his brain. But in the sacrifice of taking his own memories away, those memories of his childhood, and now he's headed to Beijing to take data from one place to another, to Newark, New Jersey. Hot on his heels are many bounty hunters working for the mega corporations, street preachers, one played by Dolph Lundgren, star of Dark Angel, and of course, Shinji. Now, there's also Yakuza hot on his tail in the form of Takahashi and the corporations. But in the midst of that, Johnny will have a revelation about just what data he is taking and where it will go. Find out more in 1995's Johnny Mnemonic.
In the conception of this film, it was one which started out as an art film between, of course, Gibson and Longo, to basically make an art film on a tiny budget. But they just could not find the money behind to really get it what it needed to be. And it was something in the lines of, you know, just a couple of million dollars, but then spread very quickly to something closer to 30 million. And of course, with that became also a time when the internet was spreading. Of course, 1995 was the time where everyone was getting the dial-up modems to attach to their computers, and we're trying to get into emailing as a big thing at the time. You can imagine, at that stage, it was such a popular thing because it was in the news, it was everywhere. So this kind of story, running on, of course, cyberpunk and, of course, the culture around that, was the perfect thing. And, of course, the motivation to, of course, get a company behind them too, with Sony Pictures getting behind to actually put in enough budget to actually push this where it needed to go. Now, the story itself I haven't read before, so I'm talking about, of course, Gibson's actual story itself. But there are quite a few deviations here and there from the material, but also where it comes back to it as well. So be interesting to see if you listeners out there have read this before and seen the movie and where it goes to. But in this short story, there's a couple of different ones. So some of the bigger changes are basically turning Johnny, the character himself, into the main character, not the bodyguard partner in it. And of course, also Molly Millions was then renamed Jane, as the rights were owned by a company that was not with the producers. So they had to basically use a different name. So the NAS is a fictional disease in the actual film, but in the short story, NAS, or known also as the Black Shakes, is basically brought together and caused. So the root cause of the actual disease itself is from too much exposure to radiation or electromagnetic radiation, so from techno devices and stuff like that too. So it's interesting. So it's kind of like, is that a metaphor maybe in that story and even in the novel itself for using, you know, too much technology? Technology is too good, too much for the human body, I don't know, or cybernetic devices, all that sort of stuff, you know, machines taking over. It's kind of an interesting sort of metaphor for, you know, the cyborg sort of story, if you like.
obviously to the big, you know, the pharmaceutical companies that are trying to basically hold back technology, or in this case, hold back cures so they can make money. You know, this could be, well, something that's happening right now by, you know, big companies doing that, you know, and they're kind of, you know, if anything, holding it back for the monetary value and the power itself too. All right, now we're going to talk about some of the locations this film was made in, and predominantly this is in Canada. So this place is in Casa Loma, which is a place in Ontario, Canada. This is also shot in Lower Bay Station in Toronto, Ontario, and Canada, obviously Canada. Montreal, Quebec, Canada as well. The Opera House in Toronto, Canada. Spadina House, which is on Spadina Road, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Obviously, still big parts of Ontario. Union Station in Ontario. Also in Newark, New Jersey, USA as well. And various other parts too. So, you know, I think it's interesting. It's kind of a globe-trotting film in parts, but at the same time, it's not really shot that way. It's predominantly in, of course, Canada.
Johnny, tell us about some of the great trivia on this film. Johnny.
Okay, Ralphie, here we go, man.
Right, time for a quick look at the trivia, folks. Here, and just what this film really is in and around, and vice versa. So, let's look at it. Now, this film was released in Japan, obviously, with Beat Takeshi being such a big part, too. So, the spoken languages you'll find in the film are both English and Japanese, obviously, too. So, let's have a look at some of this trivia. So, it looks like the script was actually rumoured to have been thrown on the doorstep of Keanu's house. Something that kind of got his attention by the sound of it too. So Johnny's implant is detected by a scanner, but is reported as a device for counteracting dyslexia. Keanu Reeves himself suffers from the disorder in real life. So there you go. It's a little bit something different there. Robert Longo and William Gibson, as we mentioned earlier, started to try and look at making this as a cheap, a lower budget art film. But of course, it spiked very, very quickly too. Of course, a much larger picture. The film itself, obviously based on the short story Johnny Mnemonic, but also takes a lot of inspiration from Virtual Light, which was another one that he did too, which is interesting. The Japanese character seen above Internet 2021, the beginning, directly translates as hackneyed, cliched in English, which is interesting. So according to the writer William Gibson, the movie itself was actually edited again by the producers after it was made into something far more mainstream. And you can kind of look at it. It is more a generic sort of action thriller sort of template in its, you know, the way it's sort of put together, I suppose. So that kind of makes sense. But the Japanese release is actually closer to the version that both Gibson and the director were looking to do. So that'd be an interesting one. If somebody's actually seen the Japanese version, you know, comment on wherever this is shared and you've listened to the podcast, and let us know what you think of the Japanese version. Is it a better edit? Does it make more sense? Is it more cerebral? All that sort of stuff. Now, obviously, Keanu Reeves plays a character holding data in his head that can kill him. How in a certain game that's come out, which I don't know too much about, folks, but it's called Cyberpunk 2077. You play a character with deadly data, and it's all in a chip in your head, and you have the character of Johnny Silverhand. That's the avatar you have, played by Keanu Reeves. Interesting, isn't it? So many years later, 15, 16 years later, whatever it is now. Gibson's not very happy with the adaptation that came out too. But at the same time, you know, he basically, you know, was credited as the screenwriter, but he says that for years that this wasn't his screenplay that they used, obviously been changed since too. This is actually the first film of Dina Meyer as well, so very interesting. As we mentioned in the locations earlier, Canada has sort of stood in for a lot of different places. Obviously, the film goes all over the place from Newark, New Jersey to Beijing, China, using obviously the locations we mentioned earlier. So, you know, again, very, very interesting way to put together. So, this film is a lot of fun. If you can find it on Blu-ray, watch it on Blu-ray. It looks fantastic. I have a DVD copy. And I'm actually hunting down a VHS of it as well, because I'm kind of starting to collect VHSs, folks. I'm really enjoying them too. So, for me, I've got to say, for this film alone, this film sits on at least a 4 out of 5 on the Hallenbach scale. This is just a real rip-roaring fun 90s sci-fi thriller. And it really was the start of those great ones from 95 through to about 99 when The Matrix hit. Just before then, there's a whole heap of these sci-fi films which really seem to kick it into gear. So I hope you enjoyed it, folks. And I hope you go and check out this film. Give it some time and enjoy it, particularly if you're a Keanu Reeves fan.
G'day, folks. I hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast, looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.